children. Hi, and welcome to Cartwheels on the Sky, Poets, Poems, and Discoveries.
Hi, and welcome to Cartwheels on the Sky, Poets, Poems, and Discovery. I'm your host, Blake Moore, and for the next 30 minutes, you're going to get a glimpse into the poems and process of Jasper Henderson. Before I share our conversation, I want you to know that Jasper Henderson grew up all up and down the Mendocino Coast. He went to school at Harvard College and later at Antioch University for his MFA. He is a writer, teacher, and designer, and currently he works as a storyteller writer for Antioch University, as well as serving as the graphic designer for the Mendocino Coast Writers Conference. His poems, short stories, and essays have appeared in Joyland, Juked, 7x7 LA, Lunch Ticket, and Your Impossible Voice. For the last 7 years, Jasper worked on the Mendocino Coast as a poet teacher through the California Poets in the Schools program, bringing poetry lessons to hundreds of public students every year. He lives both on the Mendocino Coast and in Los Angeles with his partner and their cat. Here's a conversation we had earlier this week.
Jasper, welcome to Cartwheels on the Sky.
Thank you, Blake. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, why don't you start us off with a poem?
All right. I wanted to start off with this poem that I wrote a couple years ago. It's called The Liveliest of Several Seeps. Seep, as in like something seeping. Liveliest of Several Seeps. A rocky cliff topped with eroding sod forms the north wall of Portuguese Beach. Nestled in its creases, I find small waterfalls, seeps, really, water drip-dropping out of stone down to sea. And the drips drip most from a nose of wet gray rock, out of which droplets rope and silver before a dark hollow, then splash upon a damp altar. Droplets strike 20 times a second on the slick stone. Stone slick from green-brown living murk. Droplets striking clumps of lime-green algae with thin waving hairs. Splashed droplets reaching rigid, deep moss. A slick green stalactite shivers and drips with wet. I watch this as long as I can and then try to write it down. Because here is so small a world, small even like me, and I almost feel up to the task.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. You're so small.
Thanks. Yeah.
Were you going to say something?
You're picking up on like the smallness. I love like mystical poetry.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite long poems is The Canticle of the Birds by Attar. It's this like Persian mystical poem recounting a voyage of 40 different birds to go find this mythical creature called the Simurgh. And in the preface to it, it kind of collapses space and time. And it says, you know, like the universe is as small as a speck of dust and, a speck inside a speck of dust, a universe. So I always think that poetry does an especially good job of reminding us that we exist in this vast cosmos. And that
Yeah.
If you take out a microscope, we ourselves are a vast cosmos.
Right. And that idea, I think of it as the big small. So, you know, we're so big and so small at the same time. And I remember that was one of my earliest experiences before I even knew what meditation was. I loved to lay in the sun in my backyard, and that's what would happen to me. I would go big, small, and I would get so big. I'd have my eyes closed, and I'd have to open my eyes. Okay, no, I'm still right here. And I'd be bigger and bigger, and then I open my eyes. Okay, no, look, I'm still all right. And then I get smaller, and you can't get any smaller, and I open my eyes. And so
I
feel like your poem, because of the vastness of what you're talking about, you know, it's a natural wonder place, but then it's also this little teeny, like, piece of. Oh, it's you did it very well. It felt like a meditative poem.
Oh, thank you so much. I love, like, the way that poems can tightly observe the world.
Yeah.
Like, that we can use language to do that. I was thinking of poets who I liked, who I could mention, because I'm terrible when I'm put on the spot. But I think of, like, Robert Hoss,
uh-huh. Right?
These great closely observed poems about nature that also reflect back on the self.
On the self, exactly. And I think that's what nature's job in its own way. Like our wondrous ability to interact and be reflected in such a clear mirror. And even if it's degraded nature, you say, oh, that we did that. You know, there's still that same mirror that you get to look in and recognize what that is to be human and interacting with this incredible life being that is our Earth. So you want to talk about you?
Absolutely.
And how poetry expresses itself in your life?
Yes, I would love to. Well, the short version is, you know, to begin with the beginning, I was born. David Copperfield. I grew up on the up and down the Mendocino Coast, kind of started out in Wallala, and then kind of my family ended up spreading out all the way north to Fort Bragg, but with people in between. And I think poetry for me came out of both, like it came out of two places. One was that sense of wonder that you describe of like laying on your back and feeling your vastness and your minusculeness, which I did a similar thing as that when I was like 13 and I went to the used bookstore and bought a book on how to astral project. And one of the exercises would have you do that. And so I'd sit there and feel like my body was this giant balloon that was about to burst, like, and then do the opposite thing. And the sense of scale would get so scary that I too would have to like turn on a light and remind myself of where I was.
Right.
And yeah. And I've always felt a kind of mystical wonder at the world, in part because I grew up in such a beautiful place. The Mendocino Coast is just so full with nature and with other species, other kingdoms, plants, minerals, that you can't help but be filled with a sense of wonder. But then I think that the other place that my poetic sensibility came from and my desire to write poetry was just the great hurt of being a human in a world that often is full of other unkind humans. I was bullied a lot as a young kid, and when I found out that I could use language to express some of these emotions that had been inchoate before, it was healing and redemptive and kind of allowed me to build an identity. So when I was in high school, I joined the poetry slam team at Fort Bragg High School, which I think is you and I had never really been out of touch because you were always friends with my dad, but but that brought us back together.
Absolutely.
It was like, oh, Blake is running the whole poetry slam for the whole county, and here I am as kind of this whiz kid poetry slam participant. And I found it so fun to kind of, after you get through some of the hurt, like you can build your own persona, the poetic persona. And I read a famous poem, famous to the people who were there, at least.
Well, I'm famous and lived on past your, maybe partly because of me, but you just, I think, mm-hmm. you know, you always brought such a presence as a poet and a confidence and a willingness to, you know, what poets do is speak the truth in that sense, but your truth had kind of already transcended the, in no way disparaging what young people talk about, but it tends to be more wrapped up in identity, who am I, you know, mm-hmm. what is this boyfriend left me, or my heart's broken, or I'm thinking about sex, or, you know, all those normal things where you were already going into the deeper universal realms and bringing that back into your personal realm. So it was layered and multifaceted, which showed your natural talents as a writer, and also said to me, oh, you know, Jasper's going to take this a lot farther than here. He's not done. He's just getting started.
Mm.
And
Well, that's so sweet. We should tell the listeners, like, the poem was, it was ever after known as the penis poem.
Yes.
And it was just a poem full of like boastfulness about the size of the speaker's penis, but also with a kind of a defensive note laid in and with some wild metaphors. It kind of reminds me, you know, I feel like there have been some things since then where I'm like, oh yeah, that's kind of touching into the same thing. There's this song WAP by Cardi B and Megan the Stallion. I don't know if you've heard it, Blake, but
I didn't hear what you said. You either cut out or kind of garbled.
It's a song, a popular song that came out this summer called WAP.
WAP?
Which the WAP, yeah. The radio edit is that stands for wet and gushy. But it's about female pleasure.
Parts.
And yeah, yeah. And wetness. And it's a delightfully obscene song that is not, it's not really about sex. It's more about just like owning your body in all its silliness.
Right, right. And that's, I think, what that poem really did. I think a lot of the youth and the adults, everybody was like, wow, this is like beyond the age group and so wise and just like capture. It was like a cultural capturing that I think was really fun about it. And I don't even know, I might even have it recorded somewhere. I'm going to have to go back and look, and I might put that on, if you let me put it on a website. So, I mean, I'm not going to put it on the air currently. I don't even think that the FCC would care, but, you know, we might have listeners that might not appreciate it, even if it's allowed at the FCC. I think we're in the wrong hours for this show.
Yeah.
So then you took your poetry from the slams, and you went, talk about what you did with it from there.
Yeah, so I went to college and studied Russian literature and didn't really write that many poems in college, but read a ton of poems and got into reading poems in other languages, which was really interesting and taught me kind of the formal mechanics of poetry in a way that I had never known them before. And then when I came back, when I graduated from college and came back home, I was, you know, trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And you, Blake, encouraged me to become a poet teacher and, mm-hmm. you know, train and learn how to work with students and teach them poetry. And so for the last 7 years, I have been working. This is the first year that I won't be working, since basically I've been an adult, in our local high schools and then also grammar schools. So I eventually got up to where I was working with about 400 students a year, teaching poetry lessons, encouraging young poets in our community, making space for them, coaching poetry slam teams, and publishing anthologies of student poetry, thinking a lot about how to teach poetry. And it's just been such a fun thing, and has caused me to grow as a poet in so many new and different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes think if you really want to learn something, you should teach it.
Right, and I find that the inspiration that comes from teaching is more profound than you would think. Some people say, oh, if you're a real artist, you're not teaching. And I would disagree with that wholeheartedly, you know, as a teacher, as long as you're not teaching all the time and have no emotional bandwidth for yourself. But if you can find that balance between giving to others and then receiving and then using that inspiration to give to self, it's really potent.
Yeah. I think that's super true. And like looking at this, my list of poets who I came up with before this interview, almost all of them are teachers as well.
Right. Why don't you share a poem?
Okay. I've been writing these poems now for a long time. I started writing them before the Trump administration, and I guess I'm going to continue writing them after, but they're called authoritarian poems. And they come from a different universe in which there's an authoritarian figure who is the center of everybody's life. And there's a poet who's assigned to kind of document this world. So this is called In the Beginning. How we started thinking like fish before I was born, and so on, like fish swimming, and then like dogs. It was a long time barking before we became cows, and a long time chewing our cud before I was born. When two citizens kiss, 1,000 feel bliss. Even child sits know this is how we are made. When we were cows, we got rid of parent ownership. Then we became birds, still before I was born, and some of us were gulls and ravens and hermit thrushes, but most of us were starlings, and then we became rabbits. When we became beavers, we dammed the rivers and swam with sharp teeth. Before I was born, we were fish and dogs, cows and birds, rabbits, beavers, and then it rained, and we were human, and there was Top Man to tell us what to do.
That's wonderful. It's an origin poem for sure.
yeah.
Top Man to tell us what to do. That's a great, you have such, I mean, I think that's one of the challenges with poets is knowing when to end a poem and how to end a poem and really doing that. You're really good at that. You can bring that full circle back around and then just like leave us there with it and a lot of thought. That's a gift.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I always am encouraging my students to take us somewhere unexpected in the last line. Like, I think that if you can free the sort of the subconscious mind to take that one last leap, it can make something that's a little bit, a poem that like is verging on the banal, it can transport it into a real pleasure of a poem that leaves you with something.
And that's super true. So talk about what you're doing now. So you're no longer with Poets in the Schools. What's new?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I actually just got married in September to my longtime partner, Lisa Lacasio, and she is a great writer too. She's mostly a novelist and a great writer too. I guess I just put myself in that category. But she was teaching at Mendocino College for a couple years, which was great. Had great students, but she actually got a job teaching at an MFA program, which happens to be the Master of Fine Arts program that I graduated from in 2019. It's the Antioch University Los Angeles MFA, and she's now core faculty there. So we moved to Los Angeles in January, and it turned out to be like the worst possible time to move to a city, hoping to have that like sweet city life, which is like the main reason to live in a cramped apartment that costs too much. So yeah, we've been riding out the pandemic down here for the most part. And I got a job. I'd been working freelance doing all sorts of stuff also to supplement, you know, being a poet in the schools does not a living make.
No.
At least for me.
I think for most.
And yeah, exactly. So I'd been supplementing that with a lot of freelance, like tutoring, book design, and also just doing writing, kind of copywriting or more journalism projects. And I started doing that for Antioch, my alma mater, and I recently was hired full-time as my story title, or my title there is storyteller/writer. So my job is to go around the university, and when people do, it's a university with 5 campuses, LA, Santa Barbara, Seattle, Yellow Springs, Ohio, and also Keene, New Hampshire. And so I will call people up at all the campuses and write profiles of students, faculty, alumni, and also report out the university's news. So it's a great way for me to, it's a full-time job as a writer, which is
right.
Has eluded me to this point. Yeah. And I get to tell the stories of all sorts of different people and talk to them, which is really interesting and delightful. And I also, for the first time, am not really using my poetry skills as part of my work, which is interesting. Like I miss being in the classroom, But I also am, I think a little bit more often, I'm like, ooh, I'm going to channel my poetic energy into writing a poem rather than like coming up with a cool lesson.
Yeah, which I think is good, right? You're still doing what you do. And then you've got this incredible blog you've put out.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. When the pandemic started, I brought back an email newsletter that I'd published before as kind of a travelogue. And I started publishing it, initially focusing on writing about food, because I thought people would want to read about food during a global pandemic when no one could eat out. And then I have now transitioned to, it's just a place for me to publish writing or photo essays or poems, the writing of other people. It's really a kind of a sandbox for me to play in. I don't make any money off of it, and I offer it freely into the world. And so it's a place for me to give something. I try and make them very sweet, very, very thoughtful, hopefully beautiful too. And that's called, I finally gave it a name. So it's called Light Play.
Yeah.
And you can sign up for that for free at my website, which is jasperhenderson.com.
Perfect. Want to read us another poem?
I would love to. See, since I know we're running towards our end of time, do you think we'll have time for another
poem?
We'll
have time,
this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is called Fiction Presents Her Closing Statement. So I'm also a fiction writer. It's something that I've done a lot of in the last couple of years, at least, writing short stories. So this is Fiction Presents Her Closing Statement. 1, I must urge you to convict. Listen to this liar, the truth, gloating that style is subsidiary, except, that is, in voting booths, and he concedes in obituaries. To defend his stance, truth's plan has been to bend a bit, to be a tasty truth, to layer lies and marble marzipan, masking the bitter with paon to tooth. 2, what evidence do I present? Scandal stars in sandals by the checkout counter line, hardened glass to stop the vandals, trim all done in pine. Target men 18 to 34 implore a switch to camels if they've yet to switch before, lungs and tongue and stained enamel. He vends stuff for dreams deferred, toaster, gun rack, TiVo, flash thick, jackknife, ditch witch, body soon interred, shrink-wrapped god wraps all in plastic. 3, so I rest my case. Truth is toothsome, as the jury can see, soft like gold to the bite. But fiction has eyes that turn by degrees and even can see in the night.
Nice.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, I became obsessed in college with all of these different schemes that people have invented over the millennia, really, to create poems. These, you know, rhyme schemes, but also
meter
rhythmic. Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah, and I spent so much time writing different poems that had schemes like that, and I eventually kind of came out the other side, being like, I think I prefer to write more freely than that. Like, that's not the thing for me necessarily.
Yeah.
But it was definitely a useful, I don't know. I still find it fun to try and.
Well, it's the idea that you know the rules, and now when you break them, you know you're breaking rules, and so you're doing your own thing. And I think that's one of the challenges with higher education for some people, as you get exposed to all of these amazing people and all these techniques and everything, and then when you compare yourself to it at the level that you are when you're learning, it can sometimes stifle the creativity because you don't feel like you measure up to it. And so I think that's one of the biggest challenges that a learned poet faces, is to keep going. I've had this conversation with a number of friends who almost had their confidence just taught out of them as they encountered more and more of these just remarkable, groundbreaking poets. They're like, oh my God, how could I even possibly think that I can keep up with any of this? And, you know, it's that remembering
that is so
of those
true.
Unique voices, right? I mean, you would know. You've experienced it probably in your own way, have had to come through some of your confidences.
Yeah, I've definitely had periods where my confidence has just been utterly shattered. And since then, I've had the chance of meeting, I knew you. You were one of probably the first poet that I really knew. But I've had the chance to meet and become friends with a lot of great poets. And what I've found is that they're not what I guess I probably imagined when I was in college and thinking I could never write a poem this brilliant. Like, my poet friends are not actually sitting down and thinking, how can I create something that is so dazzlingly technically perfect? No, they're sitting down and thinking, like, how can I express this? You know, how can I have fun? What way of playing with this is going to keep me interested so I can keep working it until it's something good?
Right.
And so having a connection to that place that wants to make art, that wants to play, that wants to finger paint, that wants to just be and express and explore. Having that connection is so vital to making any kind of art, and so easily severed by formal study. And yet you kind of need both, or for me, it's been productive to have both the very formal study and then kind of the years in the woods getting back to that essential urge.
Right. You want to read us one more short poem and then we're out of time?
I would love to. Yes. This is called Odysseus Truly Home. I'm kind of taking you through. I have a bunch of like different series of poems. This is my reworkings of myth. Odysseus Truly Home, and it's for Lisa. I'm sick of travel despite its compensations, the jab of a new room, hungry, unfamiliar eyes, the lick of a different ocean. Quicken time, erase my pulse, surge and blush and wring my weeks like a sponge. That throb, that ache, of course I like being awake. There was that big borrowed house to hold us. A spot of light crossed the blue sea rug, climbed the red mountain, shivered you, close the bedroom door and leave a light on your skin, turns milky quartz. We love so much, our eyes roll back and our growls fill the room. Return close and warm. Sharing a womb in this here with rival and beloved, my primrose. I watch us sleep like stranded silverware. Don't move. Nothing ever ends.
Thank you, Jasper. What a great...
Thank you, Blake.
What a great poem. What a great way to end.
It's been so great to be on Cartwheels.
Oh, you're just... Thank you so much for the way you show up in the world and as a poet and your continued inspiration in my life and I know in the life of so many others. Keep up the great work. Oh.
Thanks so much. You too, Blake.
Well, that about wraps up our Cartwheels on the Sky for this evening. Jasper Henderson, coast poet who's now living in Los Angeles, born and raised right here on the Mendocino Coast. Wonderful human being. If you want to catch any archives of this show, you can go to my website, bemoreyou.net. That is the letter bemoreyou.net, and go to the listen section. Thanks so much. You're listening to KGUA, Wallala, Blake Moore, Cartwheels on the Sky. Have a great evening. Stay tuned for more.